comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet, thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. We are here because you have a right to know, and because, regardless of what anybody else says, all through the day, regardless of what anybody else does, you matter. We have something you really need to avail yourself of if you haven't, and that is our free weekly newsletter. It's called the K-Files. It's absolutely free. All you got to do to get it is go over to my website, and when you get to the website, you'll see right there in the middle of the screen big letters that say K-Files. Just click that and subscribe. You'll get a confirmation email with a link in it that you have to use to activate your subscription, so be sure you do that, and then you'll start getting the K-Files. I want to say hello to all of our listeners out in the Denver area. I was on the telephone today with Jerry Wills, and he has just spent some time in the Denver area and told me that we have really quite a cadre of listeners out there. And so I want to say hello to all of our friends of the Kevin Smith Show out in Denver. And even though I'm a Saints fan, I have to tell you, Broncos rock. And so maybe you guys, if I can't convert you, I'd like to convert you to Saints fans, but if I can't do that, maybe you'll at least accept the fact that I like the Broncos too. If you're a member of the Kevin Smith Show, have you checked your members' message box? You need to check that several times a week, because that's where all the important information goes, and you know, for the members. And so you might say, well, I'm not getting any messages from Kevin. Well, that's because you didn't check the box on your profile that says receive newsletters. When you signed up for your account, you didn't check that. So you can go to your profile page and check that, and then you'll start getting them. Okay, so be sure you do that. We've got something special coming up this weekend. We also have our new members community in development. It's almost ready to roll out. Most of it is working. There are a few little things that are not quite working yet. If you are already a member of our members area, have you yet tried to log into the new members community? Well, you might say, I didn't know I needed to. And I might say, that's because you didn't read your messages in your message box. Be sure you do, okay? Be sure you try to log in. And if it doesn't work, you need to go to member support and send me a member support ticket so we can get that fixed for you, okay? Tonight we're going to be talking with a couple of gentlemen who have both been guests on this show previously. Terry Reed and Travis Walton will be my guests, and we're going to be talking with them about their abduction experiences. Each of them have been abducted by extraterrestrials. And they have gotten together to compare notes. We're going to get the benefit of that tonight, right here. Don't go away. Thank you. right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I made a boo-boo. I made a mistake. I was looking at another piece of paper that had some names on it, people that had sent me messages, and I said, Terry Reed, it's Tom Reed. Thomas Reed has been with us, and Travis Walton has been with us separately, on separate occasions, to talk about their experiences with being abducted by ostensibly extraterrestrials. And the reason I say ostensibly, I have absolutely no doubt that these gentlemen are telling us the truth. And yet at the same time, to be fair, we do have to say ostensibly because we don't have hard proof that they are extraterrestrial. They may be terrestrial, but inter-terrestrial instead of extra-terrestrial. I don't think either of these gentlemen have postulated that, but that is something that is postulated by some of the people in the UFO field, and we'll get their opinions on that. But let's welcome them to the show. So, Thomas Reed, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Kevin.
And Travis Walton, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, good to be back.
You both have been guests, and you've both told your stories, and yet, gentlemen, every single night we have some new people that join our listener base, that join our audience, and maybe, just perhaps, have not heard your stories, and I don't want to get too bogged down right at the beginning with the stories, but if each of you could give us just kind of a couple of minute rundown on your experience with extraterrestrials, and we'll get into the similarities of your two cases. Let's begin with Tom.
All right. Our case was a case that was started actually in 1954, before I was born, with my mother, and it picked up with us, my brother and I, in the 60s, 66 through 69, and then it pretty much had stopped. We had a horse farm up in New England, and of course after that, my father ran for office, and we didn't talk about it much or shed much light on it until Robert Bleckman, who was an attorney as well, and knew my father, brought it to discussed it at the United Nations in 1992, and then over a period of time, in actually 2009, we had something happened again in Indianapolis, which had a lot of physical evidence with it, and so it kind of stirred everything up with our case and brought it all full circle, if you will.
All right, and Travis?
Well, you know, it's probably most familiar to people with the movie Fire in the Sky, but there were some fictionalizations there. And basically, though, the general story of there were seven of us working in the woods, and after a day's work, we headed home and saw this large glowing object hovering near the road. And I got out and went up to get a closer look, and before I could get away and get back in the truck, I was hit by a bolt of energy from the craft, which my crew members thought had killed me. And so they, thinking that they were next, fled. And but they gathered their courage and returned shortly, and by then the craft had taken me. And so they went to the sheriff and reported it. There was a massive 4-day manhunt in search of me. Meanwhile, the law enforcement accused the crew of murdering me and making up this wild UFO story to cover up for killing. And so they all volunteered to take lie detector tests from the state police. And when they passed, it was kind of a thing where people were just looking for something else to explain it away from then on. But
What year was that?
It happened in November 5th of 1975. And,
Okay. Obviously, they didn't murder you. You're here. And we're glad of that. But both of these cases, aside from the fact that there are extraterrestrials involved and a craft involved, on the surface, don't sound like they have a whole lot in common. With Thomas, it's something that was kind of an ongoing thing that happened in the family for a number of years. Started before he was born, and he experienced through his childhood. With you, Travis, it was something that just, to coin a phrase, out of the blue happened to you. And how old were you when this happened?
I was 22 at the time.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, other than the familial character of Tom's experience, there were some kind of interesting parallels in the things that we encountered.
Well, let's talk about that. What are some of the parallels? What are some of the similarities between these two cases?
Well, boy, Tom would be the one to ask about that. But
okay, we can do that. Go ahead, Tom.
All right. Well, Travis and I started talking a little bit about these things, it wasn't so much you were focusing on anything rather than just conversation. And one of the things that I had mentioned to him, and this is how the, with me anyway, how this came to be, is there were a lot of little things that you don't really mention, that they're kind of unspoken, just the tiny little things you feel might be insignificant at the time. And as you turn, as time goes on, you turn to these things and you say, well, I didn't never mention that to anyone. How would, you know, why would that have happened, or how would they have known that? And to give you an example, when I was on his craft, there were these black, I refer to them as black stones when I was very, very young, and I used a lot of metaphors or similes, if you will, and they were about a little bigger than a marble. They were black, and they were on a pad of some sort, a whitish, clear, like just a cup of some sort. And I had one placed on my leg, and one placed on my side, and one placed on my face. And I had never mentioned that to anybody. And, you know, my brother and so on, but aside from that, I mean, outside the family. And there was a piece that came over me as well that I believe was to keep me in place or what have you. But at that point, I basically went out. And I had...
when you say you went out, you mean you blacked out at that point? You became unconscious?
Yeah, I don't remember much after that.
Uh-huh.
It was... I remember sitting there and having this thing come down and these pieces put on, these black marble-like pieces put on me. And I don't remember them being perfectly round, which is why I refer to them as stones. But at that point, I went out. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned this to Travis once, just out of the blue, just kind of... you know, trying to share something I never mentioned before. And as it turned out, he had something similar like that happened to him, and which he felt might have anesthetized me in some way, as he felt what happened to him caused the same reaction. And at that point, I had more of a connection with him than anyone else I've ever spoken to, because no one else has ever said anything remotely that would... you know, parallel an event like that.
Okay, let's get Travis to describe. Travis, in your case, what happened with you and stones being placed on you?
Well, it was actually a black, I call it a golf ball sized sphere, and but it was attached to a mask that was actually placed over my mouth and nose, mm-hmm. which caused me to lose consciousness. But there was a number of other parallels. The interior of the craft, you know, contrary to the way that was portrayed in the movie, was very sterile and clean looking and very mechanical. And, you know, that's what Tom describes in his experience. And some of the shapes of the interior and the surfaces have very similar descriptions.
Mm-hmm. I think when you were here with us before, and I may be getting this mixed up with what someone else has said, but I think you said that everything was pretty rounded off. There weren't sharp corners.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Now, Travis, you know, I have a difficult time trying to separate what I've seen in the movie with what may actually have happened. So I want you to help me here. Did you see beings that you would identify as extraterrestrial or as at least non-human?
Yeah, and I've accepted the term, for want of a better term, of aliens, but small humanoids, hairless, with large eyes.
Mm-hmm. Would you say they are what we commonly refer to as grays?
Yeah, of course that terminology didn't exist back in 1975, to my knowledge. But that's similar to what people. But I think a lot of what people are calling grays are actually several different groups, and they're just lumping them together because they have a general similarity.
The ones that you saw, were the eyes almond-shaped, or were they pretty much round and just oversized?
Just oversized. They were actually an eye like you would see on many Earth species, or even a human being, only very large, with eyelids that blinked.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it was very dimly lit in there, and I have a theory that perhaps these reports of a black glassy eye are actually some sort of an attachment or a covering, although they don't have frames like eyeglasses like we have. But because it was so dimly lit in there, and these large eyes suggest to me that they live in a place that is has a low level of light. So the amount of light we have in our common environments would be way too bright for them.
Well, that's interesting, and we'll come back to that. Thomas, what about you? Have you seen and have you encountered any of these beings that you would describe as extraterrestrial or non-human?
Yeah, it's funny. My brother and I saw more than one type, if you will, but with respect to what I guess would be looked at or viewed as a gray today or something more humanoid, it's funny, again, that the eyes came up because I actually mentioned some time ago that I thought I had seen what looked like almost like a goldish amber, real underneath this lens cap, and I used to think for a long time that it was some type of a hood or something that they were wearing because, I knew that outer lens wasn't actually a biological eye, and I've fought with how would this lens stay on their face, if you will, because it does appear to be an eye, but I've from the very beginning really known it not to be, and. Again, these are the kind of little things that I think are interesting.
Mm-hmm. The ones that you saw, would you say they fit the description of what most people are talking about when they use the term grays?
Well, there were a couple that were much much taller and thinner that were in this hallway area, and the ones that I really saw or were with the most were a little more humanoid looking, I guess, and there were always several together. I was never left with one, or I was always accompanied, if you will, and corralled in some way, and you know, always taken and with these individuals, and almost like escorted to one area to another, and then I would I'd be joined at that point, and then I'd be escorted to another area, and they were always on my left, and at times there were, you know, four or five at a time with me, but I was never ever left alone, and it was almost as if these were guides for me of some sort.
Did either of you feel threatened?
Well, I was so terribly frightened that, yeah, it was a very threatening situation for me, but one thing that we did compare notes on was the feeling of suffocation, of not being able to catch my breath, and that adding so much to the panic, right, Tom?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when did that happen?
At a time, I really couldn't even breathe.
When did you experience that? While you're laying on the examination table, or the whole time?
The whole time I was, yeah.
Okay, Travis, you said the whole time. Tom, you said.
Oh, sporadically throughout different points. You know, there was one. Just to give an example, I was sitting on this silverish table-like tray. It was very low to the ground. I was able to get on it, even though I was 10 years old, slip up on it. And I was in a time when I was waiting for whatever, and this being or individual came into this area or the room and just frightened me to the point where I couldn't breathe. I mean, I literally thought I was choking, and it was the event itself. It's funny in a way that you have this apprehension and you know this is wrong and different and odd and strange, and yet to some degree you kind of proceed with it and try and go with it for whatever reason, and at the same time you're so you're just so taken by it, and it's very, very difficult.
Well, even if you decided you weren't going to go with the flow, if they've got you on a spaceship and have you up in beyond Earth's atmosphere somewhere, if that's the case, you may as well go with the flow because you can't get out.
Well, I was panicked enough to try to get out, even though had I succeeded, that would have been pretty disastrous, probably.
Do either of you have any memory of the spaceship that you were on? And we'll have to get the answers to this when we come back, because we have a break taking over. Do you have any recollection of being in space? We'll get the answer to that when we come back right after this.
I've been a member of the KSS member area since 2009. I really enjoy the fact that I have access to the K-Pods that are archived. I download them to my computer, put them on my MP3 player, and I can listen to them at my leisure on my long commute to and from work. I'd really like to see you in our community. It's only $6.95 per month, and it is worth far, far more. I sincerely hope you will join today.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking this evening with Thomas Reed and Travis Walton. Gentlemen, when we went away for break, I asked the question, do either of you have any recollection of having, when you were on board the craft, having been taken out into space?
Well, for me, I saw star patterns that, you know, I took to be probably a representation of where it was at. And so I would think that might have been an indication that it was out somewhere very far from the surface of the planet.
Okay, but at that point, there was still gravity inside the ship, right?
Oh, yeah. I didn't feel any sort of motion or anything like that. I didn't hear the sounds of machinery. It was just seemed to be as stationary as you know, the room I'm in now.
What about you, Thomas?
Well, you might recall when I was on your show probably about a year ago, I mentioned that one of the first things that I remember seeing while I was on the smaller craft, which is the only one that I remember ever seeing any type of a screen on, the larger craft that I was on, it may have had one, but I wasn't able to see it or taken to an area where it was. But the smaller craft, the first thing that I was shown was a pattern that looked like the shape of a sneaker. These stars, you know, again, I used to wear Converse All Stars, so I remember this. That's how I pictured it. It was like a sneaker going off to the left, and but I don't believe that was anything other than just. I don't believe I was anywhere but on the ground, really. It was very solid. And then after that, I was shown an image of this willow tree and lake and like a willow lake, if you will. And it was when I say immediately afterwards, maybe a couple of minutes, I was shown something else. So I don't believe it was anything other than something that they may have been trying to convey to me. But again, trying to understand what was trying to be put across was difficult, although I truly believe they were able to understand how I felt and so on, but I really wasn't really getting what they were trying to relay to me, if anything, or if it was, I'm sure they were trying to tell me something or they wouldn't have shown it to me, but what that was, I still to this day don't know.
Well, and see, that you led right up to my next question. What do you think the purpose is for these abductions? And I'll let each of you answer. Thomas, any idea what the purpose is?
Well, quite honestly, I think I do know, or at least have a good idea, and I've been wrong before. So, with the family coming together and talking about this collectively, we strongly believe that it involves genetics. It's biological. There are a lot of different aspects to it, I'm sure, but I really do believe that for this to have happened to my mother, who has also given statements and spoken to investigators and authorities, and my brother and ex-wife, and there's children involved, and everybody here pretty much feels the same way, that it must have something to do with, who knows if they're extracting growth hormones or maybe the Rh negative factor plays a part in it, but there's definitely something that they're looking for, I believe, and they may have found it in my mother in 1954, and whatever that was caused what happened in the 60s, and then again with our children, certainly Chance having these abilities that he has, that's well documented, where did that come from? Could that have been just normal development? Sure. It could be normal development, but then again, it is what he can do is a little bit rare. So I do believe that there's something being not maybe just extracted, but something that is mutual, and really that's all I can really share. I do believe that this has been happening for a long time and maybe played a part in our development of man to begin with. So.
All right, Travis, what about you? Any idea about why you were taken on board this ship?
Well, I've always, and quite a few observers have also, theorized that, basically what happened to me resembles an accident, something that was just sort of spontaneous. But, getting back to the idea of parallels between what happened to him and me, there's bunches of them. Rh negative is one, and we both encountered hallways that curved, in a way that seemed to parallel the exterior of the craft. There were surfaces, and entire surfaces that glowed a soft kind of a glow, rather than being like a light fixture or something.
Yeah, I had mentioned that. Sorry to jump in there, but I had mentioned a while back that the way this hallway looked, and there's two different crafts, and that's the other thing. Travis experienced two different crafts as I did. And this hallway that I was describing some time ago almost looked like a glowing square tube. It didn't look any wider or higher than the other. It looked pretty proportioned, almost like a squarish tube with rounded off edges. And it looked almost glow like a glow stick. I had mentioned that a long time ago, that it looked like it self-illuminated. And I think what, Travis, you thought it pretty much the light came from the ceiling, but it had that same glowing effect,
yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
A very soft, sort of a non-directional light.
Right. Radiant light.
Would you say that, you know, we're talking about similarities in terms of the abduction experience itself. What about similarities in the effects that the abduction experiences have had on your life?
Yeah, there are similarities in the way we were treated and the kinds of things we went through. And some of the research that went on. You know, we both have taken and passed lie detector tests, and there's been radiation readings taken by independent investigators in both cases, and unusual magnetic readings in both cases. Let's see.
And documented by not just investigators, but authorities and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, law enforcement people.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Travis, in your case, do the authorities still believe you were murdered, or have they decided to believe the polygraph tests that you're true to?
Well, I've personally passed five separate lie detector tests from three different examiners, all of them, you know, with law enforcement associations. And, you know, it's something that the sheriff who investigated this kind of is straddling the issue, because the town is so divided, you know, half on one side and half on the other, that he basically is very noncommittal about his position, you know, to this day.
Is the town still divided?
I'd say that over time, though, it has increased in favor of acceptance. Because, you know, as time goes on, a lot of the rumors, you know, and the disproof of these theories that I've brought forth has filtered down, and so, you know, the acceptance has grown with time.
Thomas, you said you have also taken lie detector tests, right?
Yes, sir.
Why? Nobody thought you had been murdered, did they?
No, actually, this kind of came up after, you know our background. This was a very long and drawn-out type of case involving, and again, our case was certainly seemed to have been a more of a planned type of case, whereas obviously Travis is more like an accidental type of thing if you look at it in that light. However, with that said, we all gave our testimony and statements to numerous individuals, and just a couple of years ago, it was picked up and started being handled by Steve White and Max Mitchell and Chase. And after the investigation and the 4-inch thick binder we have of all our notes and emails and correspondence and so on and so forth, basically I just agreed to take a polygraph test to what was in that binder, that everything that was in that binder was... you know, you could take to the bank. So I was brought down to take a polygraph by Steve White, and we spoke for about 3 hours with the... it was right across the street from the police department, actually, here in Knoxville, and went over about 3 hours worth of questions and took the polygraph, and of course I wanted to take it. I mean, I had nothing to hide, and I actually thought it would, help solidify a few things for those who were still apprehensive about anything.
Mm-hmm.
Even though at that point, I think it was pretty obvious what had took place.
Tom, were you the only one that took a polygraph? Were any of the other witnesses polygraph?
I was the only one that took one with the Tennessee group that was investigating. Yes.
So, but still, you know, you have multiple witnesses, and so do I.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting about polygraph. Polygraph, you know, I'm an old cop, and you hear people say, especially defense attorneys, well, it's not admissible in court. It's been proven that
it's... But you know that's not true.
Well, I know that's not true, but they say that. But when it comes to UFOs...
in many states.
When it comes to UFOs, the same people who will say, well, that's not admissible in court, will turn around with UFOs and say, well, if he doesn't have anything to hide, why won't he take a polygraph? It's just curious yeah. to me how they flip that record over and over and over and
right.
play it whichever way it suits them.
And if you fail the test, no one believes you from there on out. But if you pass it, they still have the reservations about it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's a good point. And again, with Travis and I mean that the polygraph was only a small part of the pie. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, when you've got everything else that goes along with it...
all the witnesses, after all these years, are standing by the story.
Well, and that's important, too. And you know, I don't understand, honestly, gentlemen. We have literally mountains of evidence, and people say, well, there's no proof. Mountains of evidence that UFOs are real, mountains of evidence that some of those are not from this planet. Mountains of evidence that they're it's not mass hallucination. We got all these mountains of evidence with thousands upon thousands of witnesses, including cops, airline pilots, military pilots, right up to generals. And then you still have people who, in their self-appointed internet genius status, say, well, there's no solid proof. And the fact is, and I've been in court many, 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 many times. And the fact is, there's no such thing as proof. There's evidence.
Yeah.
There's just evidence. Even in
it's
court.
It's all evidence.
It's all evidence. And what you have to do is you have to look at the evidence, you vet the evidence, and then you decide that's reliable and that over there is not reliable. And, you know, I don't get it, but those folks are still out there. All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back in just a moment more with Thomas Reed and Travis Walton. Back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guests this evening, Thomas Reed and Travis Walton. These two gentlemen have incredible, incredible stories, and I don't mean incredible in the sense that they're unbelievable. I mean incredible in the sense that they're phenomenal is a better word. Amazing stories of having been abducted by extraterrestrials at times in their past, and everyone I think is familiar with Travis Walton's story, at least the movie version, which he's told us, is there are parts of that have been fictionalized for the movie, but you've seen Fire in the Sky, and I think everybody who listens to this show on a regular basis and other shows is familiar with Thomas Reed's story as well, because he's been here, he's talked about it, he speaks about it at various gatherings and conferences. Let me bring up something, though, that's pretty bizarre, and it has to do with Thomas Reed. Thomas, there are three people who have mysteriously died. Three people that were in some way or another connected with your case. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, sure. My father was the first to go. Let me back up a little bit here too. In the mid 80s, my father was a Democrat, an attorney. Robert Bleckman was also a Democrat and attorney. Robert Bleckman happened to live closer to me, in the Hartford area, and my father lived in West Haven, Westport, Greenwich, down that area. When my father ran for office, he was backed by Governor O'Neill and Senator Christopher Dodd, and had a good following. Was very public, and Robert Bleckman was also, but he was in a different county. When he put a lot of, he was very well liked. He worked very hard with local children and that sort of thing. They were both very, very good people and very much the same. They would go to mixers, and where they ran into each other. At this point, the conversation had come up. My father and Robert met for the first time, and Robert Bleckman was also affiliated with MUFON back then, and was very interested in this Hudson River, New York City case where the craft was under the water, and mentioned it, and my father decided to share our history with him. As it turns out, Robert Bleckman's... Yeah?
We're listening.
I got an echo. His law office wasn't even...
Let me just point out something before you go any further. Just now... You got an echo. Just now, you've begun to talk about something that somebody thinks is sensitive, and they've decided to start recording. Okay? Don't let that make you nervous, but that's why you just got an echo.
Yeah, I'm hearing myself very vividly. But, all right, thanks for that. Anyway, this is all common knowledge anyway. It's in the New York Times, so... they're not going to get anything out of it. They can't read online. But anyway, as far as where Robert Bleckman lived was very close to my condo at the time, or Soho. And my father had given me a ring, said, "Why don't you go speak with Robert Bleckman? I met him. He's a very nice man." We, you know, and so on and so forth. So I stopped into his law firm. This was back in the mid-'80s. And at that point, Robert Bleckman looked at our case. I started having a very nice friendship with him. And he went further into our case and went back in the 60s and interviewed people and dug up this account. My mother's account, let me back up one more spot here. When this took place with my mother before I was born in 1954, it was in the last week of June. Apparently, there's another case that happened at the same time in Maine, right over the Canadian border with an airline, a flight, and a jet was dispatched or and so on and so forth. So that really gave him the fuel to continue and go further with this thing. Anyway, after Robert Bleckman spent a lot of time with us, he took the case and mentioned it in 1992 at the United Nations. And when he came back, he spoke to my father about possibly writing a book because my father wasn't going to run anymore. And was going to take it easy and become run a school, which he did. He was a principal of a school in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And a few years passed, and decided to write a book. Now I've never seen the book, and I don't know. I know that was part of it was called Cornerstone. Although I'd never read it, never seen it. And so my father went into. This was in 2006, went into school and became violently sick. He couldn't drive himself to the hospital, and my mother went to the school. They took him, ambulance, paramedics, and he died 36 hours later. During that time, there was some high schoolers that had seen individuals in the school in his office, and the next day the police came in because someone else had gotten sick, and at that point they noticed that all the ceiling tiles in his office had been changed with fresh brand new ceiling tiles. Anyway, they called the CDC in, and this was in the New York Times as well, and at first they tried to say that my father had Legionnaire's disease, which obviously doesn't kill someone in 36 hours. The CDC came in, took out his air conditioning unit, and found that something was placed in there. It was a deadly virus, and the school has been condemned and shut down ever since. Robert Bleckman passed away shortly afterwards. And just recently, and Steve White, Max Mitchell, and the Tennessee MUFON, those who have been involved in this case, Chase and so on, know about Michael Buckner. Michael Buckner was a director of the Knoxville Hypnosis Center who met with my son because he had had some very high scoring in school ever since he was little, superior range, 126th percentile in the country, people-to-people, things that he shouldn't normally be able to do, beating chess pros in fourth grade, that kind of thing. So right around the time I took my polygraph test, Steve White had made a call, and we had brought my son into this Knoxville Hypnosis Center, which somewhat specialized in this type of thing. And after an extensive evaluation of my son, he put it in writing that he had heightened abilities, is how he worded it. And I think he, you know, after he evaluated my son, they came up with our history as to what, you know, do you think there's a plausible connection? Do you think something could have been or fueled or spawned his abilities? And he went and wrote a letter, and that he also believed that if there's this much solid information and documentation, then yes, you know, something could have been happening outside normal development. And he wrote this letter on September 15th, and he was dead November 15th. About 8 weeks later, he was found dead inside his front door of his condo right here in Tennessee.
And what did they rule as the cause of death for Michael Buckner?
Well, I spoke to he was divorced, and I called his wife's office and spoke to her administrative assistant, and just that foul play, but because she was no longer, you know, married, that she was not able to get the reports as to you know, what the particulars were, and that they were, since they were no longer married, but that's it. And
so what do you think is going on here?
I think my father knew more than I do about certain things, and he was also a public figure, had a lot of pull, people listened to him. And he was very nice with people in general. And
all right, we have to step away for a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. So hang in there, all right? Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guests this evening are Thomas Reed and Travis Walton. Gentlemen, you have a article, a kind of a joint project that is going to be published soon or has just been published. Tell us about that.
Well,
take that one, or?
We're working on a cover article for the MUFON Journal. And it's going to be kind of on the topic of what tonight's show's about.
What do you have something you're trying to accomplish with this article? Does it have a particular focus?
Me go, or?
Yeah, go.
Okay. I guess the bottom line, Kevin, is this. For years, I have had this feeling I need to figure out what this all was about, and I saw over the last couple of years I've been speaking to different Debbie Cobble, and who's been very nice, and a few others, and there's a few that I have that you connect with. You know, there's a couple that you say, you know, I have something common with this person. I don't have anything common with that person. And the more you talk to the ones you have, you know, something similar with, and you start sharing little things that you say, you know, you know this happened. You know this happened to this person. You kind of have a feeling that, you know, this is something that should be explored. And really just kind of just the tip of the iceberg of that, really. The more we're talking, the more we realize that, yeah, there's really something here. I mean, we've got cases out there that, not to say they didn't happen, but you have cases out there that, for whatever reason, they don't have anything to look at this and say, okay, well, I wish someone else was here to tell me what if they experienced that kind of thing. And with Travis and I mean, everything was very mechanical. There was a lot of hallways that looked the same, rooms that looked the same, the vibration and the feelings you got and the vibe in the air. I used to refer to it as a three moon feeling. There's a when the craft was there, the crickets around it affected the wildlife around the area. So yeah, I think it's important that when you find someone else that has these same or experienced very much the same thing, that you explore that a little bit and start taking it a step further, and maybe one day we'll hopefully find a real pattern of some sort.
Well, I'll tell you what I'd like to do. I'd like to invite our audience to join us and participate in the show. And, folks, you need to listen very, very carefully now, okay? Tonight only, the telephone number that you need to call is different, okay? Tonight, the number, if you wish to talk with Travis Walton or you want to talk with Thomas Reed, you have a question, you've got a comment, the telephone number for tonight is 623-237-3814, okay? 623-237-3814. Those who are watching our TV channel, it's on your screen now. As always, if you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can participate in the show by calling. That number will work anywhere in the world. But we know it's very expensive to do international long-distance calls. So, if you're not in Canada and you're not in the USA, we have the flash message option on the website. Okay, so you just go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down till you see the picture about tonight's show, and then right above it is the link that says flash message. All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. This is John from Conroe.
Hello, John.
Just a quick question for Travis.
Okay.
Travis, I've been familiar with your story for years, and I would like to know more about the symbols that you have been shown, if that is possible.
Well, I wouldn't call them symbols. There were black lines on a screen that moved in response to certain buttons that were pushed, but they didn't resemble numbers or letters in any conventional sense. It was more like some kind of measuring system or something. I don't know.
Okay. Did the symbols seem to interact with your thoughts in any way?
No, not really. They just seem to respond to some buttons that I pushed. And, you know, we didn't have touch screen technology in those days, so I never even thought to touch the screen itself and see what effect that would have had on it.
Well, I have a question about them. When you say they were some black lines, was it black lines like in an orderly pattern like a barcode, or were they just sort of scrambled around on the screen?
I guess you could compare it to that, although it didn't look like a barcode. Would it looked maybe like a ladder or just long lines with short little segments on them that would change angles and slide up and down each other. And it's kind of a geometric sort of a look, but I didn't...
Were there colors involved?
No, it's just black lines on a green glowing background.
Okay, well, thank you. I will listen to the rest of the show. Travis, it's been a pleasure. You're obviously a celebrity in this, you know, domain, and it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you,
Kevin.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Bye.
Let's see, ladies and gentlemen, let me give you the number again, because not everybody has joined our members area, and therefore they're not looking at our screen. So let me give you the telephone number again. It's 623-237-3814. Again, 623-237-3814. If you have a question or a comment, you want to participate in the conversation here tonight, and I hope you do. It's a great opportunity for you to talk to these two gentlemen who really are, I would say, both celebrities in the field of UFOs, extraterrestrials, etc. All right, to the telephone, caller, you're live on the... caller, you're not live. Okay, sorry about that. 623-237-3814. All right. These symbols that he was talking about, I had forgotten about that, but... and you say they just sort of slid up and down next to each other and changed their pattern when you would touch buttons. Now, were these, would it be something like a bar graph that was moving?
Well, not really. I don't know. I could kind of draw it out, but, you know, it's not like I have a real exact memory of what it... It's just an impression, because it was something... I'd never seen anything like it, and it's just black lines with little short segments that intersected them at right angles, and except the long lines crossed each other at various angles that would change.
Hmm.
Yeah, the... If I may, can I jump in here for a second? Or?
Yeah, and let me say to the caller, just hang on. We'll be with you in just a moment. Go ahead, Thomas.
All right. And you might remember this from our last interview, but the symbols that I saw were on a table. There were it was a table at 3 o'clock, hypothetically. Let's say you have a donut and you cut it in thirds. The top third of the donut was this area that I was just inside of, and there was a table about 3 o'clock and one that pretty much, or at least it seemingly matched it to the left, at 9 o'clock, and there was a figure at each of these tables, and they were more like tables that they used to control something or what have you, and there were symbols on these, and I've referenced almost like Braille from like if you go to the bank and you need to enter a couple of things or what have you. It's almost like numbers and slashes and dots, and to give you an idea what the ones that I remember, which aren't too many, one looked like an F, just like a straight capital F with a dot in the bottom of it. And another one looked like almost like railroad tracks that would have two dots underneath that as well. So that's kind of the lines that I saw. And then when I was walking out this room into a hallway, I saw these swirled lines like crescent moon markings on the floor too. So with regard to markings, that's what I saw.
Okay, good enough. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kev. It's Deb from Columbus.
Hello, Deb.
Hi. Travis, I spoke with, well, we didn't really speak. We kind of friended each other on Facebook, and I chatted with you last month about your talk up in sort of northern, northeastern Ohio, and unfortunately I couldn't make it that day. But I wanted to ask you, I mean, I have been following your story, as I told you before, for years now. Do you remember, unfortunately I came a little bit late in the show, so I really didn't kind of hear what you were talking about in the beginning. Do you recall, in addition to seeing the graves, did you just see the small grave or the taller, like scientific graves?
No, just the only so-called graves that I saw would have been short, very short.
Okay. All right. Well, that was my question. You gentlemen have a good night.
Thanks for the call. But now, Thomas, you have seen the short ones and the taller ones too, right?
Better now, Kevin.
Well, that's because I pushed the wrong button and I had you on the studio speakerphone. Okay, the reason for that, too, ladies and gentlemen, since I have the telephones swapped tonight, I'm used to pushing certain buttons for callers and certain buttons for the guests. And, you know, when you get old like me, it's hard to train and learn new tricks. Okay, but Thomas, you've said yes, you have seen the taller ones as well as the short ones, but they're still
still
grays, right?
Well, again, I don't subscribe to terminology only because that's again, I can tell you what they look like. The shorter ones were typically what you hear about 4 feet tall. Now, again, I was 10 and I was a lot smaller too, but and the reason I reference the taller ones because when I had gone to this top part of this donut I mentioned earlier, there were some that were considerably taller, which would, you know, reference more of like my parents. So I would say that they were at least probably 5.5-6 feet opposed to 4 feet, and there was a difference in structure. The smaller ones seemed a little bit more maybe a little more robust. The taller ones were very looked very frail, but they weren't. I had my left arm grabbed at one point, and they weren't weak by any means. But there was a difference in their attire too. The taller ones seemed to have those lenses that I referenced earlier. That you don't know if it's headgear or if they're wearing something over their face, and because it definitely wasn't or appeared biological. Whereas the smaller ones, you know, again, they were just a little bit different, a little more humanoid looking, I guess. And but here's another thing I've never really mentioned either. They only pretty much, from what I found, that they're very stationary. I would, you know, that there'd be a figure in a at the end of this hallway or in a room and you're some type of a workstation, if you will, or table or doorway or hangar area. And it's almost like they're just kind of there to oversee a particular zone or something, and when you're crossed into another zone, you're picked up and moved by that person who operates that particular part. That's what I got from it. And because I didn't go from point A to B, or, you know, without having been picked up and met by someone else and taken further by that individual.
All right, to the telephone and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. It's Haya from Victoria, British Columbia.
Hello, Haya.
Hello. Hi. Oh, hello, Travis and Thomas. I got quite excited because you were talking about, because I've had similar experiences myself at the age of six in 1954, Eastern Canada, West Island of Montreal. As a child, about 6 years, between the time I was a very young child until 6 years old, I suffered very greatly from earaches that none of the specialists could find out. And when I was about six, At night, I saw a child outside, which I thought it was. I followed them into a forest near our home, and there was a lighthouse in the middle of the forest, which seemed very odd to me, but I followed the child in. And next thing I know, it was just like, it was, the whole place was metallic. There was a light there, but I don't know where the light source was coming from. There was no door, there was no window. And when I woke up in the morning, I had leaves and dirt all over my feet and legs. But since that day, I never had an earache ever again. And I found what attracted me was the fact that there's just little things that seem to come up in my memory as the time goes by. And some of the things that you were talking about, like the light source and I guess you could call grays. I didn't think them as grays. I just thought them as kind of little people. And it just, it sounds like very similar. I mean, Thomas, were you six when they were taking you?
Six, seven, and nine. Actually, it was six and a half, seven and a half, and almost 10. And my brother.
And Travis, how old were you exactly?
No, I was 22.
You were 22.
Yeah.
And do you find, because I've had some downloads a few times since, have you found that they come in very discreet ways without, I found no fear from my experience at all?
Well, personally, I was terrified out of my mind, but in retrospect, it might not have been justified, but I think the circumstances that I found myself in naturally provoked that reaction.
Yeah. And your Travis, were you really petrified yourself, or did you, were you, after they took you, did you realize they weren't going to hurt you? And you know, how were you, how was your feeling at that particular point?
Well, it's only in recent years that I came to think that perhaps their intentions were actually benign.
Yeah, that's what I picked up as a child myself. And I think my circumstance was probably quite different because I was the child chasing after what I thought was another child because I'm a very protective type of person. So that was automatic. So my concern was not myself, it was of something else. And then
yeah, I was
from
pretty concerned about my brother, too.
Yeah. And yeah, when I was in what I thought was some type of craft, it was like, it was metallic, but it was almost like a brushed, more kind of like a satin finish, I guess. And
yeah.
I don't know where the light source was coming from. It was coming from somewhere, but I don't know where.
Tarnished, right? Tarnished?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Mm. And Travis, did you see that same finish on the metal?
Yeah. I call it brushed metal.
Mm-hmm.
Just a sort of a matte metallic.
Did you see any doors or windows either in your experience?
Well, there were windows in between the. I mean, not windows. Doorways in between the compartments.
Uh huh. But when you were in an area, were the doors open, or was it just like a? It was. Oh, to me, it was like an inside of a metallic kind of brushed bottle because I didn't see anything except kind of a light source, but it wasn't like strong. It was very low. It wasn't hard on the eyes.
Oh yeah.
But I didn't see any doors or windows. But then again,
I think they need low light because they come from some place where with a very thick atmosphere and not much light gets down to the surface. So I think that's what's with the big eyes. They need big eyes to gather a lot of light.
All right, Chinook, by any chance?
What was that, Haya?
Were both of you Rh negative as well?
Yes.
I have Rh negative as a recessive trait. My daughter is Rh negative.
Oh, and this is who am I speaking to?
This is Travis, and Tom also has a lot of Rh negative in his family.
Yeah, and I'm an Rh negative A myself. None of my children are. And I was adopted, so I don't, about my parents, basically mother, we assume is Mi'kmaq, father, Mohawk, kind of a quirky thing to have a negative child. But, yeah, I was a negative. And I've done a lot of research, and I'm finding that it seems to be negative traces or traits that seem to be picked up for some reason. I don't know.
And the Native American aspect of it, too.
Okay.
I have some Native American ancestry myself.
Hiya, we have to move along, but I want to thank you for a fascinating call. Let's talk about that. Thomas, do you have any Native American in your lineage?
Well, I can certainly comment on the Rh negative factor, or that I'm pretty versed in my...
Yeah, but what about Native American? Yeah. Are you part Native American?
I'm not really sure.
Okay.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, we're kind of mutts. A little bit of everything. German, Scotch. I mean, we're by, American Indian in us. I mean, there's a lot.
A lot of the Native American lineages are hard to document because there were no written records on that in many cases.
Hard to say.
Mm-hmm. All right, ladies and gentlemen, the telephone number tonight is 623-237-3814. 623-237-3814. And if you're outside of the USA or you're outside of Canada and you want to participate in tonight's show without making an international long-distance call, you can do so. You just go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down till you see the picture about tonight's show, and then right above that picture is a link that says Flash Message. But if you're in Canada or if you're in the USA, we invite you to use our telephone number, 623-237-3814. That's the number for tonight only, all right? The Native American thing is a pretty interesting angle to all of this because everybody seems to be able to statistically say that there seems to be a very large percentage of the abductees who are at least part Native American. And more than 50%. I mean, it's a big number.
Yeah,
but nobody really knows why.
My mother had shed some light on the fact that she thought there were Chippewa Indian in her.
Okay, Thomas, we'll have to pick up there when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back right after this. To the Kevin Smith Show, and we're talking with Thomas Reed and Travis Walton this evening, and we're giving you the opportunity to do the same. If you'd like to talk with Travis Walton, you'd like to talk with Thomas Reed, you have a question or a comment, the telephone number is, for this evening, 623-237-3814. Let me give it to you again, 623-237-3814. It doesn't matter whether you're east of the Rockies or west of the Rockies or on top of the Rockies. That's the number, and we'd love to hear from you. As we went away for break, Thomas, you were commenting on something about I had said a very large percentage of abductees are found to be part Native American, and you were commenting on that as we went to break. I want to give you a chance to finish your thought.
Yes, years ago, my mother had mentioned that that she had thought or knew or that some of our family had a little bit of a Chippewa Indian in them at one point. But again, I couldn't really answer and be specific about it, but I know that it had come up in conversation only with her and I a couple of times, but I just thought I'd share that a little bit because I do remember the conversation, but I think it was only mentioned once or twice in a lifetime. But I understand you can get tested for that too. So I might just do that, just a little swab, I guess, and then you send it in, and they can trace that back for you.
Yeah. Now, Travis, you said that you are part Native American as well, right?
Yes.
Do you know what tribe?
Yeah, Cherokee.
Cherokee. Now, here's the reason that I'm wondering about this. I'm part Cherokee. Thomas, you're part Chippewa. And Travis, you're part Cherokee.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if there's been a study that would tell you what percentages, in other words, how many Cherokee, how many Sioux, how many Navajo, how many Apache, how many Chippewa, and so forth. I wonder if anybody has done a study to break it down that way and see if there's any kind of statistical significance, in terms of which tribes.
I haven't heard of any such studies, but, you know, it might be kind of difficult since many of the more pure-blood Native Americans up until more recently have been very reticent about coming forward about these kind of things. It's only in the last few years that some of my Native American friends have, been more open about things that have been going on the reservation or even historically in the oral traditions of the tribes.
Well, given the White Eyes track record in dealing with and being honest with the Native American nations, I can understand them being reticent to talk outside the tribe. I really can.
Yeah, and that's true about a lot of things, the rituals and things. A lot of that stuff is just considered private.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up with Apache foster brothers and sisters.
Whenever, I have, from time to time on the show, I have Joe Montaldo as a guest, and he is the international director of ICAR, and they have done quite extensive research into the blood groupings for people that are abductees or contactees. And one of the things that I've never even thought to ask him about is what percentage of the ones that are Native American, have they done a study, and what percentage would be each tribe? There has to be some significance to the Native American angle to this. What would you suspect it would be, Thomas?
That's a really good question. It just goes back to the beginning of time, and I look back and I'm going to get off subject a little bit here or topic, but we have all these animals and birds and all this life, and it's hard to say where all this started from, but I would have to think that there was probably obviously some intervention and our race started somehow, and could very well, started in a couple of different areas, Europe and so on and so forth, and maybe with the Indians, and who knows how this all grew, but it's very possible.
Well, my speculation on that, on the deal about why Native Americans, my speculation would be that because they were here first.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Right.
And so, and there's this generational thing. Like, Thomas, you talked about it was with your mother.
Right.
And then with you, maybe it could have been with your grandmother. You don't know.
No, I don't know. Yeah.
You know, and so, but we have a lot of testimony, don't we, of this sort of generational thing about abductions. And
like they're following something over time.
Right. Oh yeah, I totally believe that.
So if they started,
that's why I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say. So you know, if they started, you know, couple of centuries ago or further back dealing with the Native Americans, then you know, they've still got their generational program going, and hey, you know, we showed up, or the Europeans showed up, and so we maybe the Europeans showing up and mixing with some of the Native Americans. It's kind of like we just stepped into their program that was already going on.
Well, there's a subgroup that's associated with the Cherokee called Melungeons, M-E-L-U-N-G-E-O-N-S. And it's kind of something that's very obscure that a lot of people aren't aware of, that this is a very unusual genetic lineage that possibly... came from the Eastern Mediterranean, but predates any other known contact from the Europeans into early America.
All right, let's go to the telephone and caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. This is Leah from Tennessee.
Hello, Leah.
Hey, I was curious if anybody ever heard, when my daughter and my son was married for about 10 years, we sat down and figured out how much percentage of Irish and Indian and Celtic and so on that we had in our blood. And we figured out for at least four generations, that's as far back as I could go, that even from combining so many different four different generations, we have kept the same amount of percentage of German, Irish, Indian. Not all the same kind of Indian and all, but it was all of the pretty much the same percentage in every generation, right down to my grandkids.
What do you think the significance of that would be?
Well, that's what I've wondered. I mean, really, it seems, what's the chances of that? Considering the experiences I've had and seeing with my grandchildren and strangeness with my sister and me when we were little. Before that, it was all so hush-hush, it's hard to find out anything.
Well, I don't know. You know, there's a lot of strangeness in most of our genealogies if we all really knew. There's a lot of strangeness in it. This is one of the reasons that I'm always a little bit amazed when I have been referred to as white. Well, yeah, partly. I guess I'm part white. I am also part Cherokee. And I'm part some other stuff, too. I just happen to turn out looking like the European side. But not all of my relatives do.
Well, pretty much most Americans are mutts, but...
Well, you know, when my daughter was born, she looked like a Mexican.
Those are my words, yeah.
Yeah, I just found it ironic that, like, my grandfather was Indian, and then my daughter-in-law, who I didn't know, our families didn't know each other, from a totally different state, found out that her grandfather was an Indian. And then that's what really spurred us to figure out, well, then they found that we had the Irish, which was my grandmother, and then it just worked out to every generation, despite how diluted it was, from totally different states, we wound up with the same percentages of backgrounds.
Well, I don't even know what the probability for something like that would be,
yeah,
but it is interesting. Yeah. Leah, thank you so much for the call. All right, the telephone line is open, 623-237-3814. 623-237-3814. And let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, this is Mike from Kentucky, Kevin.
Hello, Mike.
You already know my story. My grandmother's full-blooded Cherokee Indian, but my dad was half Cherokee, and we've got a lot of Irish in us as well. But I'm not having any experiences like Travis or Thomas. So I don't know that that really plays a major part in anything. But, Travis, in that movie, you know, Fire in the Sky, I know they, you said that they took a lot of, just a lot of Hollywood in that, as far as that. But did you actually see, as they portrayed in the movie, that there were little space suits like these little guys would have worn?
No, I didn't. You know, that is the only spoken word in the entire abduction sequence is the word spacesuits. And I think it's their one concession to the large-eyed appearance versus, you know, the way they represented the aliens in the movie as having very beady little eyes, which was not the way they looked at all. So, you know, when he encountered the spacesuits with the large eyes, then that, I guess, was supposed to lead a lot of the audience to conclude that, well, that's why sometimes people report the large eyes, even though these are the creatures, but I that's not the case. And I think it actually, you know, the idea of an eye covering is probably a better explanation for the, you know, the black oval shaped eyes.
Thomas, did you by any chance encounter any such things as spacesuits for the aliens?
Well, this is a good question, and I'll tell you why. I actually asked Travis a question the other day. When I was on, this was back in 67, I had come through this hallway area, and there was a room or a squarish-looking area with a what looked like a almost like a utranium or a glass or top to it, and I had stepped around it, and there was a suit there that almost looked like something that we would wear ourselves.
Okay, we have to step away for a break, and we'll be back in just a moment, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking this evening with Thomas Reed and with Travis Walton. Now, when we went away for break, Mike had asked a question about spacesuits, and Thomas, you said you did see one time something that looked like a spacesuit.
Yes, it was. It would look more like something that you know, we would have worn opposed to someone else. It was a little more typical of something, you know, maybe a modern NASA type of a suit, if you will. It didn't look like it was something that would have certainly wouldn't have fit some, you know, them. And I saw it just one time. It was off to the left and leaning against the wall. I don't believe anyone was in it, but just sat there and I saw it for, you know, a moment or two, and that was it.
Okay, that brings up, you know, Travis, when you were with us before, we talked about the possibility that there were humans involved, and you were unsure whether they were human or just what they were, but they looked human, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and this sort of speaks to the issue of, you know, the whole genetic experiment sort of a thing, or the ARS kind of a thing. Is there this other type of being that I saw, this human-looking type, are they actually humans? I mean, are they from here, or are we something that they have left here, or in some way an actual genetic combination, or is there just an interest in a species from out there that happens to resemble us to a very, very high degree?
Well, perhaps what we call human may exist in many places and not just here. When the Europeans first arrived over here in what they referred to as the New World, I'm sure it was a shock to the Native Americans that this was the New World. They had been here for thousands of years.
Yeah.
You know.
It's not new to us.
Yeah, and it was a shock to the Europeans that, hey, there are people there. You know, maybe it's the same scattered throughout the galaxy. You know, maybe there are us on other planets out there.
Well, you know, it's not so far-fetched to think that, you know, separate but parallel evolution. It occurs here on the Earth where you have a creature called a sugar glider down in Australia that is very much like our flying squirrel. But the one in Australia actually comes from a marsupial, you know, a totally different lineage. But because of the similarity of their environment, they came to look so much alike.
Hmm. Thomas, you started to say something, too.
Well, I was more commenting on the gene coding, how I feel about that, and you know, how that... I really do think plays a part in probably a large, you know, in a large scheme of things. And I was going to mention something that, again, you take the mule. The mule is a combination of a horse and a donkey, and yet if you take an Rh negative person and an Rh positive person, then and you work on having a family, there's a good chance that the mother, her body will try to reject this Rh negative child. So there's some things that I guess are natural and meant to happen, and some things that our body rejects, and yet over time we see these things happening. We're having ligers and mules and so on and so forth, yet they can't really breed normally. So I think we do it here. We use genetics to take advantage of science a little bit. So I feel that that's something that may have happened in somewhere else many, many years ago, and possibly why we're here today.
So you think that we are possibly the genetic product of extraterrestrials from the past here on Earth?
I think there's I don't even know if, to be honest with you, if we're... And again, this is a little bit of a stretch, but I'm not so sure that we're... you know, this is really where we started, or that... It's I look at things from the standpoint of, hypothetically, I mean, Travis has a 170-something IQ. We, as human beings, don't have anything else even close in line with our abilities, or our, we would die without clothing. You know, it doesn't look like we were meant to be here. Now, whether that holds true or not, it's certainly, we're the only animal on this planet that would perish with the comforts of home. And you have to ask yourself, you know, where and how did this... Do we just evolve, or was there some intervention?
Hmm. What do you think about that, Travis?
Well, you know, when you look at animals, you know, they have evolved to a point where it's just barely good enough. But with humans, we seem to have this surplus. You know, like, what is music? You know, why do we have all this wiring that right. apparently is totally unrelated to survival?
Well, yeah, music, philosophy, literature. I really doubt, although it is fairly well established that whales have a language, I doubt they sit around and tell stories, you know,
that we know of.
That we know of. Same thing with birds. Birds have language, but I kind of doubt that they're sharing novels with each other.
Although I suspect never mind.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. We got about a minute left.
Now go ahead, Travis.
I was going to make a joke.
We're
I'm so sorry.
Nice with this conversation already.
All right. So when will the article be appearing?
Tom?
Oh, sure. Well, we're going to have it submitted by the 7th or 8th of September. And the article is going to be pretty detailed, specifics, documentation, and things to support, you know, what we find to be some rare but commonalities, and you know, and then we're also going to have some that are opposites. Again, Travis saw a chair on a craft. I didn't see any chairs at all. So. Just little things like that might spark an interest and then be of interest to someone. And I believe it's going to be out for probably the second week of September. It'll come out in the journal.
Okay, well, that's something for us to look forward to. I want to thank both of you for being here with me tonight. It's been fascinating, as always. And I hope both of you will come back and share with the audience again.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
All right.
Yeah.
And
we'll
both of you, if you will, just hang on to the line there for just a moment. I want to chat with you just a moment after we go off the air. Ladies and gentlemen, let me remind you that we have a new members community under construction. We have a members area already. And if you join the members area right now, it's $6.95 a month, and you can lock that in for the next year. When we open the new members community, which will be in just a few days, I hope, that goes up to $7.50 per month. Still the best value out there on the Internet, but you can lock it in for the next 12 months right now at $6.95 per month. So join before it's too late. All right, that's it. That's a wrap for this evening. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.